Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here with us today on Voices for Change 2.0. We are glad to have you.
Yes, thank you very much for spending your, what was it, Saturday?
Yeah.
It is Saturday.
It's usually Saturday when we do the show on it.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you for joining us on this lovely Saturday morning in December. I don't know about where you're at, but we actually have snow. We're rather excited about that. Just because we're sick and twisted, but it looks beautiful out, and it's funny. We were watching A Christmas Story last night, and commenting at the very end of the movie, the old man and the mom are sitting there. You know, the kids have already opened up their presents and they're sleeping, and they're just sitting there in the dark, and the tree's lit, and there's this beautiful snow falling, and Beck and I looked at each other and said, you know, it'd be really nice if we had snow like that for Christmas. And then we
wake up today and we have snow like that.
Yeah, we have snow like that now. So a couple weeks early, kind of hoping that it sticks around for Christmas. And after that, it can go away till next year. So
yeah.
One other thing that we're going to bring up really quick before we have our guest join us is, you know, today is December 9th. And for those of us that are nerds, that means that we're only 6 days away from Star Wars: The Last Jedi coming out.
Woohoo!
And, you know, very, very excited about that. I'm looking forward to the movie. It looks really, really good. But it's bittersweet because, you know, there's a note of the fact that it's one of the last performances of the late, great Carrie Fisher. And, our hearts are broken at the thought of her being gone. And, that's one reason we're looking forward to seeing the movie, is to see her and all her greatness one more time.
Yep, that about sums it up. I'll start crying. I've already got a lump in my throat as it is. So that about sums it up pretty well.
Yeah, don't cry, baby. It'll be okay. So, your turn.
Oh, okay.
I know I'm not shutting up this morning.
Yeah,
so.
I thought you were going somewhere with that
Yeah, no, the only place I was going was to get you going.
Okay. Well, I'm excited about our guest this morning.
I am too.
Over the last year or so, I've gotten to know her pretty well. And she's always there for others, even when she's struggling with her own symptoms of PTSD and depression. She's a wonderful, wonderful person, and her friendship has gotten me through some tough times. So she's a talented writer and mental health advocate. So please welcome to the show, Davina Lytle.
Hi, guys.
Hi,
thank
good
you
day.
For that amazing intro.
Well, we're honored to have you on the show, and we, we both love you very much. You know this. And just
yeah.
We're happy that, you know, you could spend, you know, an hour this morning with us.
Yes, I'm really happy to be here as well. I love you guys too. You've been, you were one of the first people to follow me when I first started the journey to create a platform. And I love you guys.
Aw, thank you.
Thank you.
So do you have any questions for us before we get started?
Not really. The only thing that I want to say before I start is to remind everybody that this conversation could be triggering for me. And if you know anything about PTSD and mental illness, when we get triggered, we go into fight or flight mode, and the thinking side of our brain shuts down. So I tend to lose track of where I am. So I'm going to count on you guys to help me out if I lose my way, if that's okay.
Okay.
No problem. We will do our best to do our best.
I think awesome. Somebody needs to go back to bed.
Somebody does need to go back to bed, and it's not either of the ladies on this line, nor is it our producer. So I think we all know
who we're talking about.
All right. Well, let's just jump right into the questions here.
Yep.
So, Madame, when were you first diagnosed with PTSD?
I was first diagnosed with PTSD back in 2005. I've had it for most of my life, and I really thought that I was okay and that there was nothing wrong with me. But when I got diagnosed, my daughters chimed up and chimed in and said, you know, Mom, like, we could never come into you when we were having a bad dream at night. I've always been hypervigilant, but I just thought that, you know, it was just, I don't know. I don't know what I thought. But, yeah, I was diagnosed after I got held up, and then that kind of spiraled out of control after that.
Okay. Were you able to find adequate care, or was it a struggle to find someone to believe your story?
It wasn't a struggle to find anybody to believe my story, but, I mean, trying to find adequate care. There's not a lot out there when it comes to treatments for PTSD. I tried cognitive behavioral therapy. I did that for a year, and honestly, I feel like it made me worse. And there are studies now that say that it can make PTSD worse. I have tried trauma incident reduction therapy, and I found that that has kind of helped, but it's really hard. They decided that I reached my maximum recovery, and that's the workman's compensation, and they just cut me loose. So there's no there's no help, there's no funding. And as you know, if you're on disability, you know, therapists are between $125 and $175 an hour here in Canada. And when you're on disability, you just can't afford it. So I've just been kind of counting on my social media family. I do a lot of research online, and there's so much great information that comes through social media on mental illness that I just have been reading it and trying to do the best with myself.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's tough when you're kind of stuck at that point where, you know that you're not where you need to be, but you've got the so-called authority saying, no, you're good. You know, we're cutting you off here.
Yeah.
You know, we're sorry that you had to go through that. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It
so
is,
are you?
I think
are you?
Sorry, Becca.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to.
Okay,
ask
and the reason why
were...
I said go ahead is because I lost my train of. What was the question again? Sorry.
No, we're just talking about how difficult it is when you know you're not where you're supposed to be, but you've got all these people that are, you know, quote unquote in charge saying that you're good, you know.
Are you still getting care right now? Do you have someone that you can rely on?
No, actually I don't. I can't afford it. You know? And
yeah.
I'm just kind of suffering in silence, I guess, you know? I'm just counting on
treading water.
The research. Yeah, because what else is there to do, right? I mean,
right.
if you don't have the money, then... And there was... I did see a person through my family doctor, and they're free. But the last visit she had, she said that she felt sorry for me. I mean, she knew me prior to my holdup, because I'd been in there with my kids. So she kind of knew me. And she said she felt sorry for me. And you don't need people feeling sorry for you when you have a mental illness. You need people to advocate for you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, and that's the hard thing, you know, is not everybody has that. You know, when, you know, before Beck and I got together, she was kind of on her own with dealing with doctors and her own treatment. And you know, once we finally got together and I started going to the doctor's appointments with her, you know, especially the quality of care she was getting when we first got together, because it was through the county. And, you know, it's not bad, but it's not good. You know, it's not the top upper echelon of what you can get.
You're treated like a number on a file, basically.
Exactly. You know, and it's you know, you're in and out like cattle. And you know, for me to be there, and it got to the point where the doctor was talking to me, and I'm like, I'm not the patient. My wife is. Talk to her. I'm just here to back her up. You know, so when you don't have that kind of support, you know, that makes it doubly tough trying to advocate for yourself, you know. So, you know, and that, you know, I feel for you on that because it is, I've seen it. It's not easy, you know, and don't ever let anybody tell you that you're not tough for, you know, handling what you have to handle because, you know, you're one of the toughest chicks around.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So.
Thanks. And don't get me wrong, I do. My husband is absolutely amazing. He is my biggest advocate. He doesn't understand PTSD, but he's so. I don't know how to explain it. I don't have to explain anything to him. He knows exactly how I'm feeling. He can tell when I am triggered back. When he told the service dog people what to look for. And I wash my hands. I call it washing my hands. When I get stressed, I put my hands together. And, sorry, my phone is beeping in my ear. Can you hear that?
No,
we don't hear anything.
So I wash my hands when I get anxious and the dog has been trained to nudge me and get me out of that. But he's the person, he knows exactly how I'm feeling. He can tell by the tension in my face. You can tell by the fact that I wash my hands or whatever. So, and he'll come and give me a hug. And yeah, it's pretty amazing to have somebody like that on your side. As you know, Becca, right?
Yeah, I do know that very well. And I'm very grateful is all I can say.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you love somebody, and they're going through, you know, what you go through and what Rebecca goes through. You step up, you know, and you know, you show that person, you know, if you really love them, you're going to do what you can to make it, you know, easier on them, you know, to help them to cope, to get through this life a little easier.
Not necessarily make it go away or fix things. Just, you know, be there by the person's side.
Exactly. You know, and you know, I'll ask her, and she said this before, I'll ask her when she's going through a depressive state or something, I'll say, is there anything that I can do to make it better? You know, and a lot of the time there isn't, you know, but just the fact that I'm asking. And if there is, she'll tell me, you know, she'll say, well, can you give me a hug, you know, or whatever it might be. That little thing in that moment, I know, helps her feel better. And, you know, without question, I'll do it. So.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, so kudos to your hubby for being supportive, you know, and, you know, helping out however he can, you know, because it's not easy. You know, and PTSD is, you know, absolutely a traumatic thing to go through. You know, I feel for anybody that's afflicted with it because it's, you know, you never know when you're going to have something that's going to trigger you, right?
Exactly.
It's just, you know, something can happen out of nowhere and it's, you know, boom, and you're triggered. You know, I feel for that with, you know, the soldiers that come back from fighting, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And kudos to you guys. You guys are rock stars, honestly. Because, I mean, especially with PTSD, you know, like I can be okay and then I get triggered and I just, my mood just changes. And I honestly, I don't know that I could live with somebody like me. You know? I really don't. So, yeah, you guys are rock stars. Our supporters are rock stars.
Yeah, for sure.
Sorry, Becca, for interrupting.
Well, yeah. Oh, no, you're okay. You know, we want you to talk. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's perfectly fine.
Okay.
It's definitely better for you to talk than to just sit there and...
Yeah, we don't want you to go, yes, no, maybe.
Okay.
No, no, this is a conversation that we're having. So we want to what's the word that people use now that's ridiculous? Conversate?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's terrible.
Yeah. They're shorting everything.
Our society is falling apart. Anyway.
Anyway, on to the pleasant conversation that we're having.
Yeah.
About God only knows what. I don't know what's going on with the person on the other side of the desk today, but...
I'm tired.
Are you tired? Why are you so tired, Joe?
It's a long story.
Okay.
It's just a long story, long night of battling cats. So, yeah, that's what they do. I love them, but yeah.
So let's go back to our question.
Oh yeah, they absolutely will keep us both up all hours, and you know I'm grateful on the days that I'm off. You know, like today, where it's not as big of a deal, but it's those working days where I'm getting stomped on at 1:30 in the morning. It's like, come on, man. So.
Yeah, we tried to have a cat actually about a year ago, and I couldn't handle the jumping up on the bed in the middle of the night. Just would scare the crap out of me. So.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah,
really well.
You know, that sucks that you have to. You know, when you have a situation like that and you have to let it go, but, you know, you got to look out for you too, you know. And that's coming from a couple of animal lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Davina, when did you decide to come forward with your story? Was your blog the first time you ever talked about it?
Yes, it was. So I decided that I was going to write a book about my life. And the PTSD, surviving with the PTSD. And when I spoke to an editor, she told me that I needed to create a platform. And prior to that, I didn't even have a picture of my face on Facebook or social. I didn't even have a Twitter account. So that was really, really tense. That was in August of 2015. And I wrote my first blog. I have a very good friend who's a photographer and videographer, and he found out what I was doing and offered to do my picture, cover for my book, as well as a video explaining about why I was speaking up. And then I don't know, I got out there. And honestly,
cool.
I've never looked back. My Twitter family, I call you guys my Twitter family. We are so supportive of one another. I can be having a really, really crappy day, and all I have to do is just throw it out there. And the next thing I know, I've got all kinds of people coming to my aid. We help each other, and I'm so glad that I did come out and start talking about it. But, yeah, that was the first time that I started talking about my story. And honestly, my family of origin is not very happy about it. And I wrote a memoir, but I've been advised not to publish it until after they pass, because it's going to be really hard to prove my abuse in a court of law this many years later, right? And honestly, I feel like when I got held up, the police said that the guy didn't have a gun registered to his name, therefore he didn't have one, and he didn't directly threaten me, so I couldn't charge him, which that doesn't make any sense at all to me.
No.
So I don't trust in the judicial system, so I'm shelving the book, and I started the Survivor's Guide, which I originally had talked about, and I hope to have it out sometime next year.
So. Okay. That's good that you're getting that out there. And, you know, I feel badly that you have to shelve your memoir, but... You know, by the same token, I don't blame you when you're getting the advice of, you know, having to shelve it until certain you know, members of your family are no longer with us. It can be tough, you know, the way the laws are written. I don't understand the one with you being held up. You know, the majority of violent crime like that, they don't own their guns. They're stolen guns. There's
exactly.
You know, that makes
really
no sense.
Who's
to
gonna
me
use a gun that's registered, right? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, that's half the argument down here in the States with the NRA, you know, is that it's not the legal gun owners that buy the guns and that are licensed to carry the guns. It's the criminals that break into homes and steal the guns, or, you know, buy them on
exactly.
the black market or whatever. You know, they're the ones using them. So that doesn't that makes no sense.
Yeah.
It just makes no
it
sense.
It doesn't. Yeah, it
so,
doesn't at all.
You know.
So, yeah, and that's the thing that really got me in the beginning was that I became a caged animal. Like, for the first 2 years after I got held up, I was afraid to leave my house. The only time I left was when the workman's compensation, they would book appointments for me. They'd pick me up by a taxi and take me to the appointments, and then I would come home. And I feel like I was the one who was treated like the criminal. I was unable to leave my house. I was so terrified of the outside world. Yet here's this guy roaming around free.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that's not right. That's absolutely not right.
No, it's not.
So we are a little bit into the show now, so we've got to take our first break.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Check out David Hernandez and his song, Beautiful.
Father in the sky, and they start into a line. I see you passing by, and we're slowing down the tide. Now my love is flashing by, all I see is flashing lights. Cause you're right here by my side, can you feel it come alive? If this were a love song, would you be mine? I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song, wrote you a love song. Baby, you're beautiful. I think you're beautiful. Baby,
welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. The lady sitting next to me is Rebecca. And if you're just tuning in, we are currently talking to the wonderful and talented Miss Davina Lytle. Yay.
Hey, Joe. Thank you.
That's my radio guy.
You guys are awesome.
So before we went to our first break, we were talking a little bit about your blog. Where can people find that?
Under www.davinalytle.com. And yeah, I blog. Mm-hmm. I post articles I find that are important, like the TIR therapy. I have information about that on there. And I try and blog weekly. I think I hit 100 blogs a couple months ago. But I find when I'm really, really struggling, it's best for me to step back. So there have been a couple of weeks where I just said, you know, I can't do it. I'm doing some self-care, and I'll be back, you know, when I can. But I find that the writing really, really helps get the crap out of my head. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
as you know, Becca, when
exactly.
you're writing, you're really, really thinking about it a lot. I probably spend about 4 hours writing a blog and editing. So yeah, it really helps me to deal with the illness.
Mm-hmm. That's why I started my blog initially, was just for me to cope, you know, to cope and to kind of purge my brain, and it just grew into something much bigger. But yeah, that's what I think we all are writing for, is to, you know, raise awareness and
get it out,
and not only that, but help yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the.
And I found, the first time I think it was my first blog. I actually had somebody that knew me on Facebook through a friend, and they reached out and said that I saved their life. They were very close to suicide, and that made me even want to get out there more, you know, that if I could help other people,
mm-hmm.
because I've gone through so much in my life, if I didn't talk about it, then it would be like I'd gone through all that for nothing. So sharing my story with other people and helping other people and getting, I mean, it's very helpful for myself as well. It really is, talking about it and advocating for mental illness is incredibly helpful for the people that have it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that's the one thing that we've found, and that's actually why we do the show too. Is, you know, because, you know, we'll like, if I'm out and about and I'm talking about our podcast, you know, I'll get, well, you know, you make any money doing that or blah blah blah, and it's like, no, you know, money has no factor in this. We don't make a dime doing this. This is strictly us trying to help other people that are in the same boat as us. You know, we're all one community, we're all one family, and we all have to stick together. And when those of us that are afflicted are stronger, it's our duty to help those of us that are weaker, you know, and that can shift by the day. You know, one day I might be stronger and the next day I might be weaker and I need somebody to help me, you know, so we're all in this together, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that you recognize that too in your writing, and that, you know, you're helping people. I mean, that's what we're here for. You know, that's the biggest mm-hmm. thing. And it's more helpful, I think, than, you know, anything, you know, mm-hmm. is having that, knowing that you got backup.
Yeah,
absolutely. And this past week, I know, Becca, you suffer with Christmas holidays as well, like because your parents are gone. I suffer because my parents are still alive, and I don't have that, I don't know, I just feel lost when it comes to this time of year, and it's almost like as soon as December 1st hit and the Christmas music started playing, and I cried this whole past week, and I let people know on Twitter what was going on, because I was struggling, and I needed people to reach out to me, and the outpouring of care was just absolutely incredible. And I was able to get through it and have a much better day on Friday. So, yeah, yesterday was the first day that I didn't cry. So.
Well, that's
yeah,
good.
It's hard. It's so hard. And I understand where you're coming from more than maybe you think I do, because, you know, I am sort of cut off from the rest of my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with my parents being gone, and then, I mean, we used to have a house full of people at the holidays.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have 20 people crammed into my parents' house, and, you know, wives and kids, and, you know, they're playing video games on the TV, and, you know, just all kinds of stuff, and everything kind of went to hell after my mom died. You know, mm-hmm. I tried for several years to keep everything going, you know.
Yeah.
And it went unappreciated.
Yeah.
It was very much
unappreciated.
Mm-hmm. There was actually a point where we looked at each other and we said, why are we trying so hard?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, now with this, with Beck's dad being gone, you know, I knew going in this was going to be a tough holiday, but
mm-hmm.
I looked at her and I said, whatever you want to do to make this as happy of a holiday as possible, we will do. And she says to me, can we get a white tree? Absolutely, we can get a white tree. And we got a white tree.
It looks beautiful,
and we put
it up. By the way.
Thank you. Yeah. It's funny because I fought her for 16 years on getting one, and I got the thing up, and I'm like, my God, that thing's gorgeous. You know,
yeah, it turned out really good.
Yeah, you know, so she wanted that, and we talked about putting lights in the windows, so we put lights in the windows, and everything that, you know, we decided we're going to take ownership, and that's a big thing with when you have, you know, the holidays especially, and, you know, you don't have the family dynamic that maybe you once did, you know, you take ownership of it, and you make it your own. And you mm-hmm. decorate the way you want, and you celebrate the way you want, and you see the people you want to see, or you don't see anybody, and you tell yourself, it's okay, you know? And, you know, I know we were both kind of worried going into the holiday, and, you know, again, Beck looked at me last night and said, you know, I think I'm okay with where I'm at with this, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've let go now. You know, mm-hmm. and so, yeah, so this is now our Christmas, you know, and it was our Thanksgiving, you know, and,
I'm finding,
you know,
this
these
year,
are these.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, please. You're finding,
no,
this
I'm
year.
Finding this year much harder because last year, my oldest daughter, who had a very, very close relationship with my family of origin, her and I didn't have a relationship at all. Because they had told her that I had Munchausen's disease and that everything that came out of my mouth was a lie. My kids had been told that I never wanted to have children, that I just didn't want them. Then when they started asking questions, just after Christmas, so it would have been January of this year, my family of origin deleted and blocked both of them on Facebook and social media. So my oldest, especially in particular, because she had a really, really close relationship with them. I mean, she completely shut down last week. We talked on the phone one day, and she was so upset about the holidays and not understanding why. Like, she never did anything, and then she didn't call. She doesn't pick up the phone. She doesn't text. She doesn't do anything. So there was like 3 or 4 days there where I had no contact with her, and she has tried to die by suicide when she was in her teens. And I think that's one of the things that made it so hard for me too this past week, was not being able to contact her. But it's just, it's so hard because we're all trying to make new traditions, and
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
it's just hard for them to understand, you know, why, what did they do? Right. They ask questions.
Exactly.
So yeah, the tree is up. It's not decorated. I used to be so into Christmas. Like, it would look like Santa barfed all over my house because I had stuff everywhere, but I'm having so much trouble getting into it this year, you know? So
yeah,
it's tough.
Well, you do it on your own time when you want to and if you want to. You know, that's
mm-hmm. Yeah, don't put any pressure on yourself. If that tree doesn't get decorated, then it doesn't get decorated.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we all put so much pressure on ourselves. You know, I know especially with me, I suffer from so much guilt if I take a day and I can't get out of bed and that it's
God,
a bad day for me. It's like
I'm the same way.
It's like I should be doing something. There are things that need to be done, but I can't get up and do them.
And I have to reassure her that the only thing, and this has been the same story the entire time we've been together, is the only thing I expect from her when I come home from work at the end of the day is that she's there to love me. I don't care about anything mm-hmm. else. I've said it before. I'll say it till the day that we are both no longer on this planet. As long as she's there and she loves me, I don't care if the house gets cleaned. I don't care what happens. I don't care if there's a dinner on the table when I come home. None of that. Because it'll happen one way or the other. You know, she'll either feel better and get up and do it eventually, or I'll get up and do it. It doesn't matter. It's minutia. You know,
and that's
what matters
says
is
about
that
me.
We're there for each other. Mm-hmm.
So
that's
Gary's
good.
The same way, Joe. He just, I get pedestal, and I wonder when I'm gonna fall off of it, because he worships the ground that I walk on. I don't see. How he can love somebody so messed up so much, you know, but he does.
I get that.
And it's making me teary.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't get teared up about it. You know, it just means that he loves you, you know.
Oh, yeah, he does. He does.
Do you want to ask about the puppy dog, my dear? Or do you want me to ask about the puppy dog?
Oh, I can ask about the puppy dog. Puppy dog was a little bit further down, but...
That's okay.
Okay, so we've seen some photos on social media of this beautiful chocolate lab that you have now.
Yeah.
How long have you had him, and what has the experience been like?
And for those who don't know, he is a therapy dog.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a service dog, actually. I have had him 3 weeks today, and... I applied for him when I first was diagnosed with PTSD. I did a lot of research on it, and I thought if I got a big dog, it would help. And National Service Dogs didn't do them for PTSD back then. But just over 3 years ago, I applied and went through the process and finally got my service dog 3 weeks ago. We spent 6 days in a hotel, just my husband and I and the dog, and we would go to classes during the day, and we would go out to malls or stores to see if they could pass their access test. Anyway, I think it was probably the third day the first day was really, really hard, actually, because his trainer, the person he'd been staying with, was actually teaching the class, and when they brought our dogs into us for the first time, he wanted to be with her. But then I think it was probably around the third day he's been going home with us. And, he licked my face, and I knew that he was mine. I've been out every day. Aww. Yesterday was the first day that I didn't go out. I cut myself some slack because even this past week when I was struggling so much, Becca, like you, I push myself. I feel guilty if I don't do what I'm supposed to be doing. I feel like I'm letting people down. When really, yep. I mean, I'm letting myself down, really, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yesterday I was the first day I didn't go out anywhere with him. But I've been out for dinner and lunch with friends, and that's absolutely unheard of for me. I've been out to the malls, and in order to keep him trained, I need to get out. Right? So it's sporting me. And there are lots of stores. I don't know about you guys, but places like Rona or Home Depot on a Monday or during the week, first thing in the morning, they're really quiet. So I can go back down to the end of the store and do all my exercises with him and then leave the store. So It's been difficult. Yeah. I don't know if you I wrote a blog about it as well, because people are not educated when it comes to service dogs, and I'm finding that it's attracting more attention to me. And I was the kind of person that if I went into a store, it was with my head down. I didn't look up. I didn't want to make eye contact with anybody. So now people are saying, "Oh, what a beautiful boy," and they're asking, "Can they talk to the dog?" And so I'm going to make it part of my job to educate the public. And I started with this blog, and I've offered the service dog place. I would like to do a video as well, so we can put it all over social media so that people understand. Because I know there are people that aren't quite as strong as I am, and even though they have the dog, they can't push past it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it so people understand that. Especially with PTSD, it's an invisible illness and you can't see. And a lot of people think, they ask me, am I training the dog? And sometimes I just say yes. They told us to say no. That because it takes the attention off of us. But yeah, I don't want people to approach me. A lot of the time I just want to get in and get out and not talk to anybody.
You know, I gotta say, it's not just you. I don't want to talk to anybody when I'm out and about at the store. I just want to get in, get what I need, and get out. I don't want anybody hassling me or bothering me either. So it's I can relate. Believe you me. When it comes to that, I just
hell, I don't even go to the store. I just let you do it.
Yeah.
And you know what, Becca? I did that. Gary did that until, and that was the reason why I got the service dog, because I do want to get out. I want to take a little bit of, because he just does so much for me. I feel like I just feel like he's giving 100% all the time, and I feel like I'm not. Do you know what I mean? So I wanted to be able to go pick up a bag of milk, or I mean, I can't do a full blown grocery shop. That's not going to happen. But you know,
right.
Dave, you need a bag of milk. Can you go pick it up? Yeah, no problem. Instead of no, I can't leave the house today. I'm hoping Laddie is going to take away the stress around that for me, and we'll see if my central serous retinopathy comes back, or I get the shingles again, or you know. But yeah, I'm hoping for the most part he's going to be the power that gets me out.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
I hope so.
We hope for that too. You know that.
Thank you.
You know, we love animals anyway, so, you know, we get to see pictures of the puppy.
honestly, I like dogs better than most people, or animals.
Yeah, for sure.
They don't judge you, right?
Right, they just love you.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's all they do.
So aside from your blog, are you working on any other projects?
Oh my goodness, yeah. I like you guys, I have people that are saying, you know, like, when are you going to get paid for whatever? But I have people asking me to write articles for them. And I just did the AMA feed, Ask Me Anything. There's a couple of other people. I don't even know who it was that asked me to write little blurbs about the Christmas holidays, what it's like to live with PTSD. So, yeah, I'm just trying to get out there as much as I can to keep talking mental health, Becca, so that we can educate the masses. You know, that's what my life, that's what it's become about, is just writing for whoever I can, trying to finish my book, and just advocating for mental health, mental illness. So.
That's great. You know, and that's, you know, that's what we all are trying to do. Hey, Davina, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions about PTSD?
That you can get over it. I think that's the biggest one. But mind you, that's mental illness, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. People just don't understand the fear, right? We have really, really good friends of ours. Last year when my central serous retinopathy was really, really bad and my eyesight had deteriorated to 20/80, we were invited to a shower, a Stag and Doe, and we went to that, But then when it came to the wedding, I just couldn't do it. I was losing my sight, and I was told to get my stress under control, and we called and said, sorry, we can't make it. It's going to be too much stress. And they haven't talked to us since. It's been over a year. And I feel bad, but I have to protect myself. You know, I know that it's invisible to you, but I've had diabetes, which I got under control, stress-induced diabetes. This issue with my eye, I've had shingles twice in the last 18 months. I need to take care of myself. And although you can't see the stress, although you can't see the illness that I'm living with, you just need to believe that this is my life. I'm not making this up. This is not a fun life. Trust me, right? Like to live in fear of everything. I mean, I'm even in a house, Gary will come around the corner and I'm so hypervigilant that I'm like, you know, it's not fun living this
way.
I
do the same thing to Beck and I feel bad every time, but
I could be standing in the kitchen. He could be behind me for 20 minutes. And just because he reaches out and touches my shoulder, I hit the damn ceiling.
Yeah. You know, so it's, we both understand what you guys go through with that, you know, and yeah, people seem to think that just because you can't see the affliction, you know, like a broken arm, for example, you know, that, you know, it's something you just get over, you know, throw some dirt on it, walk it off, you know, it's not like that.
It's not.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I wish it was. You know, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, don't you think that I wish that I could live a better life? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Like, the fact that I'm not working, I feel like I'm not giving back. I'm not holding my own. I am not contributing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word. You know, I feel like a lot of the time that I'm just not contributing and I'm not worthy, you know, and it's
you and I are so similar with that.
Oh, I know, Becca. Oh my goodness. I see the things that you post. I read your blogs and yes, we are. I mean, our illnesses are different, but the way that we feel about ourselves is so similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry you feel that way. Hugs, my friend, because it sucks.
Right back at you, my friend.
Thank you.
What advice do you have for anyone that might be newly diagnosed and unsure of what to do next?
The biggest thing for me was distancing myself from the people, places, and things that exacerbated my symptoms. You know, I thought suicide all the time. I've had 3 attempts. I have not in the last 2 years. Once I distanced myself from the people that were making me feel like I was unworthy, I mean, they made me feel like they would be better off if I killed myself. They made me feel like the whole world would be better off without me. And once I distanced myself from them and worked on a chosen family, like my Twitter family and my friends, my close friends, my daughters and my nephew. Things changed for me because I didn't have that criticism from them anymore. I'm still, the voices are still in my head, but honestly, you don't have to do it forever, but that's something that really, really helped me is to distance yourself from those things that exacerbate your symptoms.
That's a really good piece of advice. That's a really good piece of advice.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We're getting pretty close to the end of the show here, but I did want to ask you, where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter under Davina Lytle. You can find me on Facebook. It's called I'm Still Here, A Survivor's Guide to PTSD. And I also, my website, which I mentioned earlier, there's also a video out there if you want to see the real person breathing and talking. You can also look for that and just Davina Lytle. It's a video that talks about me writing my book.
Yeah, that's on YouTube.
Oh, an EMA
right?
feed too. There's a whole bunch of questions there that I've answered under the Ask Me Anything feed. as well. If you have any questions, there's still a couple more days there. If you have any questions, you could ask me if you'd like. So,
how did that go, by the way?
Really good. I was a little panicked in the beginning because I got like 7 questions, and they came the same day that I was supposed to be writing my blog. And this week I was just not in the right place. I mean, I wasn't even sure if I was going to get a blog out this week. So I was really panicked because, of course, all these questions are coming, and I'm thinking, I have to do this because I have to succeed at this, because if I fail, then I'm a failure. So, yeah, in the beginning it was tough, but then I got a handle on it. And, yeah, I think I've had probably between 17 and 20 questions, but in the last couple of days it's just been a couple each day. So it was awesome, Becca. I think a good way to get the information out there about myself and PTSD, and I talked about cannabis as well, the use of cannabis for PTSD. So,
That would have been something good to get into too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, for next time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
When your symptoms are at their worst, what do you do to calm yourself?
I started doing Tai Chi. I find that really helps because I couldn't do the meditation. I just can't. I need to be doing something. I use cannabis. That helps me with my anxiety. I smoke it. I ingest it. And I've actually just come across something recently. Mel Robbins, it's the 5-second rule. And she says that anxiety and excitement come from the same part of the brain. And if you can just change your anxiety into an excitement, and she says what you have to do is you literally have to say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go, and that changes your brain up, and then you have to have an anchor thought. And when I was doing my training with Laddie, it was so hard for me to be in the mall. Like, I didn't think I was going to be able to do the access test, and I was standing there with Gary, and I'm crying, and he said, the rule, remember it? And I just went, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. My anchor thought is, I'm going to be walking everywhere with this dog. He's going to be by my side, and I'm going to be able to get my life back. And honestly, that's really helping me as well. It's just switching the way that your brain is thinking, that yes, I'm anxious, but you know what? I can turn that into excitement. I just need to change my thought. And it's not as easy as it sounds all the time, but you know what? It's just another method of trying to get your head out of where it is.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
I'll have to look that up and find out about that.
Well, we have definitely enjoyed talking with you today.
Yes.
Thank you, Becca.
Thank
you so much for taking the time.
Oh,
you're welcome.
My pleasure.
And we hope everything goes well with you and Laddie, and, you know.
Thank you. And I appreciate you guys, too.
Oh, thanks.
You guys are absolutely amazing. People need to follow you guys.
Thank you.
Well, we are humbly grateful. So
we're going to sign off today with a dedication to both my wonderful husband and Davina's wonderful husband.
Aww.
And it's a song by Hillary Cole called "And I Love Him."
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.